I'm Marty Moscoen. Welcome back to Radio Times. Love and romance are in the air because it's Valentine's Day. Later in the show, we'll talk about conversation starters that may not lead to falling in love, but will probably lead to greater understanding and intimacy between couples. And our guest is psychologist Art Aaron. We'll also talk about styles of flirting and the role of humor in romance with Jeffrey Hall, who is a communications professor. But first up, Sarah Pappalardo, co-founder of the feminist satire website called Reductress. And Sarah, happy St. Galentine's Day Massacre. Nice to have you with us on Radio Times.
And a happy St. Galentine's to you as well.
That's great. So what is the Galentine's Day Massacre? I understand this is what you celebrate at Reductress.
Yeah, I think you might have found that was the title of our last podcast episode.
Yes.
Our podcast is kind of a semi-fictional look into what our office would look like if we were a legitimate women's magazine. So it is a little bit more exaggerated than what actually happens in the office.
So what happens in the office today?
Today someone brought in some really great mini muffins from Le Pain Quotidien, and we're looking at different hair colors. So I guess maybe it is just as ridiculous. I'm not sure. But they're looking at really expensive color jobs last I was in the office.
Oh, that's great. Well, Valentine's Day, it seems, is just perfect for satire, is it not, Sarah?
Yeah, I think it's been a very consistent source of material for millennia.
And why do you think that is?
Well, you know, the funny thing about romance and love and heartbreak is it always seems unique when it's happening to you. Most of what we go through, barring some bizarre experiences, have really happened to, like, most people in the world. And we always manage to forget that. I think that's just ripe for a lot of comedy.
You know, I did a little research, research in quotations, because I went to Wikipedia, and sometimes you never know exactly what you're going to get there. But the early Christians who we associate with Valentine's Day were martyrs. And I thought, well, that's so interesting to think that there's a kind of martyrdom associated with Valentine's Day.
Oh, absolutely. Anyone can be a martyr on Valentine's Day. All you have to do is blame the person who wronged you, and it's great. You know, today I celebrate the day that I was dumped for someone a girl met at a funeral, which I think makes me a martyr. I'm not sure.
Can you tell us more, or is that too personal?
Oh gosh, not at all.
Oh, go for it, Sarah.
Back when I was in college, I was madly in love with this girl, and we were dating for a little while, but I had to go home for winter break, and a friend of hers had died, so she went back to her hometown to go to the funeral. I hadn't heard from her for a couple of days, thinking she was mourning the loss of her friend, and it turns out she met someone special at the funeral and brought her back to Chicago, where I was living at the time.
Ouch.
So, but it was actually... I think even at the time, as heartbroken as I was like, this is objectively funny. Like, this is crazy.
How long ago was that, Sarah?
Oh, over 10 years ago, which also helps to make it funny.
Exactly. I mean, time
I was
certainly.
Not feeling...
Right.
I was not feeling that way at the time.
That's that whole banana peel thing, that when you fall on a banana peel, it's funny. When I fall, it's a tragedy.
Yes, exactly.
But obviously, so is there on Valentine's Day, is there a way that you, quote unquote, celebrate what happened 10 years ago, or you just remember it for your own self?
I like to remember it and, you know, gather my staff around the table. And, you know, I think we all like to just kind of share our good stories, because
right.
It is fun. It's amazing how funny things are when you actually... tell them out loud and really realize the story and realize that some version of it has happened to everyone. And it's great to commiserate. I think just the loneliness factor that's part of breakups and heartache. I don't know. I think we can kind of move past that by just laughing at the weird stuff that happens to us because we're all human.
We certainly are. I'm going to be talking more about this with some other guests that we've got lined up later in the hour. But and because you co-founded this satire website, a feminist satire website, even more Reductress, do you find, though, that love and romance and since February 14th, Valentine's Day, is just a good thing to mine for humor?
Yeah, I mean, I think it always has been. You probably won't see a lot of Valentine's Day content on the site today because the other factor of it is that a lot of the jokes have already been made about it.
Right.
So, you know, I think today we're talking a lot more about Flynn's resignation than we are about Valentine's Day and what people are doing tonight. So it's still fun. There's still fun stuff to find in it, but, you know, there's bigger fish to fry, too.
Well, just so you know, Sarah, we spent the first hour talking about Flynn's resignation, so perhaps that was our way of celebrating Valentine's Day. I did look, though, at a couple of articles that you've had, and I'm looking at some headlines. 5 arbitrary tests to determine if he's the one, obviously playing off all the advice people get about finding love. One of them is the question, does he have 2 vegetables? And I thought that was an interesting way of analyzing whether someone might be the right person. The fact that they would actually order 2 vegetables or have 2 vegetables in their refrigerator.
Yeah. Well, you know, that was meant to play off of all of the kind of arbitrary advice that women's magazines give about love and finding love. And we just really kind of take it to another heightened more absurd place than what you would actually see in a women's magazine. So, yeah, they're literally as arbitrary as they possibly could be.
Did he pick up the mail on his own accord? Has he driven a big car? Does he appreciate Mariah Carey as a vocal talent? These are all questions to determine, obviously playing off all these advice columns and magazines.
Exactly. Yeah. And, you know, honestly, all of those questions should strike fear in every woman's heart. So
cool ways
of media is all about.
Here's another one. Cool ways to flirt that will lead to panic if they actually work. Maintain eye contact. Listen up. Ask for help and then leave.
Yeah. I mean, that one actually is a little more real than I'd ever imagined. But yeah.
So do you have
all very important things?
So do you have advice for people looking for love?
Oh gosh, I think love is amazing and it's easy to come by. Compatibility is a whole other can of worms. So you know, if you fall in love, enjoy it. But make sure that you use your brain too.
Did you find another girlfriend after she left you 10 years ago?
I did, thankfully. I found a few.
And how important?
None of which I'm seeing now.
Okay. And how important is humor, do you think, in a relationship? A semi-serious question.
Oh, I think it's so important. Honestly, anyone who takes themselves too seriously doesn't deserve love. So get out of here.
Does not deserve love.
Yeah, that's my hardline stance. You can quote me on that.
Well, Sarah, thanks for joining us and enjoy Valentine's Day and the St. Galentine's Day Massacre.
Thank you.
You're welcome. Sarah Pappalardo, and she's co-founder of the feminist satire website, and it is called Reductress. Well, joining us now is Jeffrey Hall, and he's associate professor of communication studies at the University of Kansas, author of a book that came out a couple of years ago, The 5 Flirting Styles, Using the Science of Flirting to Attract the Love You Really Want. And Jeffrey Hall, nice to have you with us on Radio Times.
It is a pleasure to be here.
So are you really good at flirting? Is that why you wrote about it? Or was it something you weren't so good at and that's why you wrote about it?
You got it. The latter is absolutely the case.
Really?
I think I was pretty clueless back in the day.
Why do you think that was?
Well, I think that one of the things that I think a lot about when I was writing the book is that I wanted to write the book in part to myself when I was a young man, because one of the things that always confused me is that I sought intimacy with people through talking with them, through learning about them, through sharing ideas and all these things that I thought I was flirting. Well, in fact, a lot of women didn't see it that way.
They didn't pick up on all those cues. What's interesting about you is you're a communications professor. So you're not a psychologist. You're not a social psychologist. It's really about how people talk to each other, I guess, listen to each other.
That's right. So the distinctions between communication and what we do and psychology are really quite closely aligned. I cite a lot of psychologists. I go to conferences and talk to psychologists as well. But the communication phenomena, the kind of things we're interested in, tend to be things that we co-create, right? The idea that communication is sort of an embodied process that you do through talking and sharing and the nonverbal behaviors that go along with that. And I think a psychological perspective tends to be more about kind of like the psychology of how people feel and what people see and that kind of thing. So both are important part of the process. But yeah, as a communication researcher, the whole idea of the five flirting styles came about because we have a really strong tradition in communication of thinking about styles of communication. And so I kind of adopted that as I went into the five flirting styles.
And the five flirting styles are physical, traditional, sincere, polite, and playful. You described your quote-unquote flirting styles, so people didn't seem to understand. Which one were you?
Yeah, so the one that I was describing kind of most resonates with the sincere flirting style. So these are people who really seek intimacy through self-disclosure. And what's interesting about sincere flirts is that they tend to say things like, one of my favorites is that they find an intellectual conversation very sexy. Or they say things like, I feel like I'm really attracted to someone the more and more I get to know them. So they don't have that sort of sense that they're trying to connect physically necessarily. But what they're trying to do is they're trying to really get to know you and what you're all about. But as we know, those behaviors look a lot like self-disclosure and just making a friend too.
Well, is the opposite of that then the more physical flirting style?
That's right. So the physical flirting style is someone who uses their physicality, their attractiveness, their body language, touch, closeness, and all that kind of thing to communicate their attraction. They tend to do so really quickly. They tend to do so really directly. They tend to be a lot more sort of clear physically about their interest in somebody. And the physical flirting style is kind of marked by all of that sort of rapid development of showing attraction to one another.
We're almost having a break here. Give us the playful style.
So the playful style is really interesting because it's the only flirting style that has basically become a separation between what the act of flirting is and the feelings behind it. So playful flirts use flirting or flirting type behaviors to get what they want. Maybe that's a free drink. Maybe that's to make somebody jealous. Maybe that's just to get attention. So a lot of times playful flirts are kind of using flirting, but they don't mean anything relationally behind it. You know, people out there who might think of them as kind of like players, that kind of fits into this.
Right.
People who like to play games when they're flirting, all those things go with the playful flirting style.
And that's Jeffrey Hall, our guest in this section of Radio Times. We're talking about flirting. We'll be talking about humor as well. Lines open at 1-888-477-9499. Is your style physical, traditional, sincere, polite, or playful? Send us an email, radiotimes@whyy.org, and stay with us. This is Radio Times here on WHYY in Philadelphia. I'm Marty Moscoen, and I'm talking with Jeffrey Hall. He's Associate Professor of Communications Studies at the University of Kansas, happens to be an authority on flirting, wrote a book called The Five Flirting Styles, Using the Science of Flirting to Attract the Love You Really Want. And again, lines open at 1-888-477-9499. Send us an email, radiotimes@whyy.org, and you can tweet us at WHYY Radio Times, and we want your flirting stories. Well, here's a scene from Crazy Stupid Love. Jacob, who's played by Ryan Gosling, is approaching Hannah, who's played by Emma Stone. And this is from the 2011 movie. Let's give it a listen.
I think that your friend Hannah is really sexy.
Oh, my God. You did not just say that. How old are you?
What are you, a lawyer?
Yeah, a little bit.
Come on.
I know.
You are? Is she?
Gonna be. Don't you think you're a little old to be using cheesy pickup lines?
Objection. Leading the witness. Wow, Hannah, you're really wearing that dress. Like you're doing it a favor.
Oh, God.
That's a line. Me sitting over there for the past 2 hours not being able to take my eyes off of you is a fact. I find you very attractive. Do you find me attractive?
She does.
I don't.
You do. She does.
Yes, she does.
I don't.
Permission to approach the bench?
Seriously?
Just come on, let me deliver my closing argument.
Sure, proceed.
Hannah, we live in a physical world, right?
Uh-huh.
And you're going to age, right?
Mm-hmm.
I guarantee you this, you're never going to regret going home with that guy from the bar that one time that was a total tomcat in the sack. But I can't guarantee that you won't not regret it.
That's a double negative.
You're a double negative.
Okay, you know what? It's time to go home.
Really?
Mm-hmm.
Wow, it's forward of you, but okay.
Yeah.
I'll do it.
A T-Bone saw three.
So, should I get my car or yours? Should I pull the car around? Have you been drinking?
Ryan Gosling flirting with Emma Stone. Not really fair, Jeffrey Hall, to play that and listening to that terrific repartee between those two beautiful actors. What can I say?
No doubt. I actually love that movie. I use that clip also when I give a flirting style talk. So it's really funny that you use the same one. But yeah, you know what's funny about that? So there's a couple things that I observe about that one whenever I talk about the flirting styles. The first is this is how we see flirting. We think of flirting publicly in the media and otherwise as being this sort of pickup line by two gorgeous people at a bar. Well, what we know is this actually doesn't line up with what we know about how people actually meet. Over the last 10 years, people who got married, only about 7 or 8% of people met at a bar who got married eventually. So that means like 92% of people out there are meeting through friends, they're meeting online, they're meeting at work, they're meeting at school, all these sort of normal and traditional ways of meeting. The other thing about that clip that cracks me up is he is relentless, right?
This is
such an example of kind of a pickup culture. And there's a lot of messages out there about men picking women up, about how to do it and how to play games and how to be really aggressive. And all of those sort of messages kind of feed into this idea that if you can't do that, then you're a failed flirt, like you're no good at it. And so part of the message of the book and kind of broadly what I'm trying to talk about is the idea, well, there's a lot of ways to do it. And actually the way that we see most often in the media is actually not probably how most people flirt.
But are we, I mean, obviously it's the lines are written, they're very charming, they're very beautiful. Are you hearing some form of harassment? Has he gone too far? And there's just that kind of fuzzy-wuzzy line between flirting and being too pushy.
No question. There's a couple things to say. I mean, one that is interesting is I always joke that I don't know, there's probably not a lot of women out there in that circumstances that are turning down Ryan Gosling. I mean, let's be honest.
Exactly.
But we have to put aside for a moment the idea that Ryan Goslings and Emma Stones are the exception out there in the world. You know, they're celebrities and they're beautiful for a reason. Most of us are regular folks trying to find a relationship. And I think your last guest made a good point. You know, you can find romance in a lot of places, but connection and long kind of compatibility is more difficult. But I would also say that line of being too far is an important one. I can say from my own research in aggressive pickup strategies, you know, the kind of relentlessness, the teasing, the belittling, or the kind of like trying to isolate women from her friends, which are all things that he does later in that movie to other women. He belittles them, he mocks them in a playful way, but does so. This is actually related to underlying sexist attitudes. So several years ago, I did a study where it looked at this relationship between having sexist attitudes and using pickup lines like that for men and having sexist attitudes and women being receptive to that. So what's kind of scary about that particular dynamic is women who actually find men like that attractive are also ones who tend to have attitudes that are kind of demeaning to their own sex. So flirting is such this complicated thing, but it has to do with cultural attitudes. It has to do with physical attractiveness. It has to do with what you think, how you should, men and women should behave or how they should act. So it's a really multifaceted thing if you kind of start getting into it, which I have for almost 10 years now.
You must be really good at it.
I am terrible at it. To be honest.
You didn't take your own advice, Jeffrey?
I think that part of it is that I am, I'm just full disclosure.
I'm teasing you, by the way, but yeah, go ahead.
No, I know. And I've been with my wife for a long time, but part of the reason that I would say that I'm bad at flirting, and this is kind of the thing that I'm trying to have a sense of humor about, is, you know, I know what might work, but I don't necessarily want to treat people the ways that would work in a conventional male sense, which would mean like short-term hookups or, you know, getting a woman to fall for you in a way that might, you know, lead to a woman feeling, as you say, harassed or belittled or otherwise. And so there's a tension between things being really obvious and actually things being more subtle. And whether or not it's obvious or not is whether or not it's even detected. So this whole sort of my way of flirting, even if I were single now, I think would still probably be subtle enough to be missed.
It's interesting you say that. We were talking in the where we work among the producers and myself yesterday about flirting and whether people know they're being flirted at. And it was interesting how many people said, no, you know, I'm not sure anyone's ever flirted with me. Raising the question, either the flirts were so subtle or people thinking, am I worth being flirted at or flirted to, or just sort of misunderstanding whatever those cues are?
Yeah, well, listening to your last guest, I didn't realize that when women were asking about how many vegetables I had or my taste in Mariah Carey, that
right.
I should have known. Like,
exactly.
Like, oh, my God, I was being flirted with. How could I not know? That's so ridiculous. It was awesome. But I think, so there's a couple of things there. One that I just did a study last year or the year before that where we talked about flirting accuracy detection. And so what we found amazing about this is that when you're not being flirted with, people are actually pretty good at detecting this. So 90% of the time when someone is not interested in you, you see that.
Right.
So that means that only 10% of the time are we thinking that someone's being flirtatious when they're actually not meaning anything. But when flirting has actually happened, we're really bad at detecting it. In these several studies that I've done, face-to-face interactions, it basically, women were only picking up on men's flirting about 18% of the time, and men were picking up on women's flirting a little bit more than 30% of the time, but both of those were well below the actual rates. So what that means is you're missing somewhere between 60 and 80% of the time that people are flirting with you. You just don't see it.
Is there such a thing as, I mean, is the goal to be an honest flirt? And by that, I mean, rather than pouring on the language or the moves to get someone interested, is to figure out how to be yourself and feel attractive.
Yeah, most certainly. One of the messages of the book is really about people capitalizing on their own kind of natural way of communicating attraction, something that's comfortable with them, something that's consistent with their values, something that's, you know, the way they want to present themselves. But I also give a lot of tips on how to be a little more obvious. But you're bringing up an important point. People aren't obvious because they don't want to look like a fool, or
right.
they don't want to be turned down,
right.
or they don't want to see it as coming on too strong. And particularly for women, the last one is very dangerous. You know, being seen as someone who's coming on very strong has risks for women in terms of unwanted sexual pursuit or being seen in a negative light. But, you know, when it comes to being obvious, I actually recommend people doing things that are relatively innocuous, such as if you do things like, say, I'd like to see you again, or I'd like to meet with you outside of work or school setting, which is what I call in my book a context shift, right? Meet them again in a different context. If you say things like, I'd like to get your contact information or hint around it, are you currently in a relationship? These are all pretty good signs, but they're and I think they're all considered flirting by people who are looking at that, but they're not really risky moves. Saying, I'd like to see you. I'd like to see you outside of this context that we've met. And are you in a relationship right now? Those are not high-risk things to do, unlike Ryan Gosling being like, so should I get my car so we can go home? It's pretty Ford, but not too early to have sex.
I mean, hear
that's you. That's a little ridiculous comparatively.
Well, let's see what Bill from Ballykinwood has to say. Hi, Bill. Go ahead. You're on Radio Times.
Good morning.
Morning.
I consider myself basically shy, but I got up some nerve once and was sitting in a restaurant looking at this woman who had this beautiful smile. And eventually my daughter-in-law said, look, you got to let her know. So I wrote her a note, walked it over to her table, and the note said, I've been looking at your beautiful smile all night. I'm an artist who likes to dance. If you don't mind calling strange men, here's my phone number.
And?
Well, a month later, she finally called, and we were together for 8 years.
And was that unusual, Bill, for you to do, to get up and deliver, hand deliver a flirty note to a woman you didn't know?
It was, but it was inspired by a couple of Pinot Grigios.
That's great. It's a great story. Let me see what our guest Jeffrey Hall has to say. Bill, thanks for calling into Radio Times. What do you think, Jeffrey?
Yeah, that's outstanding. A couple of things I'd point out about that I really like. One is that I think that Bill's style of flirting would be maybe characteristic of a polite flirting style.
Right.
People who are polite tend to try to show respect for someone over all other things. As a consequence, they are very careful about what kinds of things they compliment or what kind of things they bear attention to. Bill also did something which was really smart, which was talked about himself in a favorable light and things that he was interested in. So rather than just a straight come on, he says, you know, I'm this kind of person and I'm interested in you. And I think that although it happened a month later, it's terrific that the woman held on to that message for that long and seriously thought about, you know, is this somebody I want to be with? Because that's how we know that the connection happens, is through that opportunity to really get to know somebody. And through that growth of a relationship, you can find out whether this is someone you want to be compatible with every morning when you wake up or, you know, doing exciting adventures in your life with.
Do men and women flirt differently? And I'm thinking of same-sex couples and opposite-sex couples as well. But is there a difference, you think, Jeffrey?
Yeah, so I've done some extra research on looking at gay and lesbian couples and also bisexual individuals and how each has a different flirting style, and found that the flirting styles inventory largely holds up in terms of the four dimensions that I've already mentioned. The one that doesn't seem to work very well is the one that's called traditional, and that's because it has specific gendered roles, men being aggressive and women being more passive. And that obviously, I think, is not clearly defined in a gay or lesbian relationship in the same sort of way, because there's not culturally prescribed rules. That said, in my conversations with gay and lesbian individuals and also some psychiatrists and others that I've had conversations with, one of the things that's interesting is that this whole concept of the pursued and the pursuer, right, comes up in all of those sorts of dynamics as well. So whether or not you're heterosexual, gay, or lesbian, there are some individuals who feel more comfortable being the pursuer, and there are some individuals who feel more comfortable being the pursued, you know, the people who wait along for someone else to approach them. And so these dynamics are different because they're not prescribed by gender roles in our society, but the same sort of process by which that people have to signal their attraction to one another somehow basically holds up.
That's Jeffrey Hall. We are talking about flirting, and you can join the conversation by calling us at 1-888-477-9499, as Bill just did. You can also send us an email, radiotimes@whyy.org, and you can tweet us at WHYY Radio Times. Jeffrey, is it wildly different when people flirt online?
Yeah, that's a good question. One of the, I think, challenges of our time is kind of sorting out how people are using these different apps that are available. We know, I actually got into doing all this research because I had an opportunity to work for eHarmony in Los Angeles when I was a graduate student. And early on in their process, one of their challenges was they were finding people who were matched and also people who were even having a good conversation online. And then when they would meet face-to-face, they didn't have that same chemistry. You know, they just weren't experiencing that sense of connection, even if they had already prior to had a conversation online. And what the challenge for eHarmony at the time was trying to understand was, were there different styles or ways of communicating attraction that might contribute to this lack of connection face-to-face? But even from there, since that point, I've continued to use the flirting styles to kind of think about online kind of interactions as well. And what we find is that kind of people who use these apps are using them in ways that kind of extend their flirting style, right? So they're going to do things that are kind of coming to them naturally, and they're kind of trying to put those things forward. So, for example, if you have a sincere flirting style, you might use really well-composed notes to introduce yourself, right, through email correspondence, like in a matching program, such
sure.
as those offered by eHarmony, amongst others. And then people who are playful flirts like applications like Tinder and Grindr because they love going through the pictures and then sending flirting messages and going on. That idea, one of my things I always say about Tinder and Grindr is that it's actually a game first and then a kind of a dating application second. And the reason I say this is it even says, do you want to keep playing when you use it? So the idea is you're just looking at attractive, interesting people who've made themselves available on this app but it really has this kind of sense of disconnect from the actual person until you meet them or find a way to connect with them. But in the meantime, you can peruse profiles, say you like them,
absolutely,
make kind of flirting messages.
Absolutely.
And it's really, really pleasurable. Yeah.
Let me squeeze one more caller on before we have to say goodbye to you. And this is Mike calling us from Philadelphia. Hi, Mike. Go ahead. You're on Radio Times.
Hi, how you doing?
Good. How are you?
Doing fantastic.
Good. Go ahead.
So typically, my flirting style is, I guess, it's sort of a mixture of the playfulness as well as the sincerity. So one of my typical lines is I always say, I'm usually shy, but I know if I walk away from here, I might run the risk of never talking to you or seeing you again. And that instantly, sort of makes him feel like, well, he's doing something out of his norm. And I don't do it a lot, so it's 100% truthful. But it's, making eye contact. I deepen my voice a little bit, do the Barry White, and I make eye contact. I try to speak sincere from the heart. And, that's the typical one I would use when, out and about. But, I always adapt it to wherever I'm at. Same at a bar and people are dancing, or I always try to use sort of a playful method, because then we're in a different setting. So I'd say something like, someone near the dance floor, I'll say, excuse me, can you dance? And they'll, laugh and say, yeah, why? I'll say, because if we go out there, I don't want you to embarrass me.
And that's
then,
great.
We'd laugh. Right. It's a challenge. It's playful. And I mean, myself,
What, Mike? I hate to do this. I hate to do this to you only because we have to say goodbye to Jeffrey in about 30 cool. seconds, but I want to give him a chance to weigh in. And I can't go wrong with Barry White and Ryan Gosling and Emma Stone. But go ahead, Jeffrey, what do you think?
Yeah, I would say, Mike, and to all your listeners out there, you can take your Flirting Styles inventory online at my website, flirtingstyles.com. And I would guess, actually, Mike is actually high and sincere and high and physical, not playful. And the reason is that he said he means what he says. And if you are really backing up what you say in a very honest and truthful way, then you're probably not a playful flirt. Also, people who are physical love to dance. They love to go out to parties. They're comfortable in bars. So I'm going to guess he's high on both. And if he's right, I'd encourage him to email me to tell him that I predicted correctly on the Flirting Styles website.
Fair enough. Mike, thanks for the call to Radio Times. Jeffrey, thank you for joining us today.
All right. Thank you.
You're welcome. Associate Professor of Communication Studies at the University of Kansas, author of The Five Flirting Styles. We're going to take a very short break, and then we'll be talking about some questions and where those questions might lead. Stay with us. We'll be right back. This is Radio Times here on WHYY in Philadelphia. I'm Marty Moscowen. We are celebrating Valentine's Day. We talked about love and satire, love and flirting, and in just a moment or two, we'll be talking about love and questions. But let me play a clip from Man Seeking Woman. This is Josh, who's played by Jay Baruchel, flirting with Laura, played by Vanessa Bayer. Let's give it a listen.
What class did you say you were in again?
Oh, 07.
07.
Yeah.
07. Do you know Ted Kasdan?
No.
He might have been 08, actually. What about Jake Barnes?
I knew a Jake Franklin.
No, I don't know that guy.
It's a lot of Jakes.
Well, Chris Schifrin?
Oh, Chris Schifrin. Yeah, I think I had an anthro class with him.
Oh. So
are you friends with him?
Then? Not at all. I know his brother. I'm an acquaintance of one of his brothers.
Oh. Wow. It's a small world.
Yeah, hugely small.
Oh, this is my stop.
Oh,
so,
okay.
Well, it was really nice meeting you.
Yeah, Josh.
Oh, Laura.
Hi. So. Hey, do you want to go out to dinner sometime?
What?
Would you like to go out to dinner sometime?
Oh, sure. I have a business card. Sorry, it's so old-fashioned.
Well, yeah. I look forward to doing business.
Oh.
Okay.
Okay. here I go.
Okay.
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 Scene on a train, a subway train from the FX series Man Seeking Woman, and of course, lots of questions. We're going to talk with Arthur Aaron about questions. He's a research professor in the Department of Psychology at Stony Brook University, currently a visiting scholar in the Department of Psychology at the University of California at Berkeley, and he has devoted his career to studying the science of love, and he and his wife have come up with 36 questions that can lead to greater intimacy and understanding. And Art Aaron, nice to have you with us on Radio Times.
Thank you for inviting me.
So you heard all those questions that sort of went nowhere, shall we say.
Well, it seemed to work out.
Seemed to work out. So what is your interest in the science of love?
Well, we try to study, social psychology has sort of made its history on taking things people thought couldn't be studied scientifically and doing it. And actually, when I was a graduate student, I fell intensely in love with my wife, now collaborator. I said, oh, well, there's my topic, because there was very little at the time. And it's enormously important. The quality of our relationships has a bigger effect. It's a bigger predictor of how long we'll live than smoking or obesity. It's the biggest predictor of how happy we are in our life. So it's enormously important. And intense love is particularly intense. It's both one of the most wonderful experiences and one of the most terrible if you're rejected.
Absolutely.
So we've been studying it every possible way. We've done a lot of brain imaging studies and surveys and laboratory studies. And one of the things we were interested in is that you were asking about is how do people get close?
Right.
What is the effect of being close? So we wanted to be able to create closeness experimentally in the laboratory. And so we looked at what's been known from surveys and observing people and questionnaire studies that people say how they got close. And we tried to put all that together so that in 45 minutes we could take any two people, put them together, and most of them will get very close. And that way we could randomly assign them to either get close or not close and then measure their hormones or measure their brains or measure their behavior or whatever. And so that's how we got into doing this.
Well, I'm looking at your 36 questions here. Let me put out the first one to our listeners because they do get a little more complicated as the list goes on. The first one, given the choice of anyone in the world, whom would you want as a dinner guest? And here's that phone number. It's 1-888-477-9499. You can also send us an email, radiotimes@whyy.org, and you can tweet us at WHYY Radio Times. So why, taking that very first question, why did you choose that, and what potentially does it reveal about who we are?
It doesn't reveal very much,
right?
And that's the point. What we find when people spontaneously get close over weeks or months is they reveal a little bit, and then over time a little more, and then a little more. If you reveal too much too fast, it can put the other person off. So the idea was to start out with some questions that are not very deep, but still a little bit, and then over time get more and more personal and deep. And so that's the idea. So this was a question that was designed to be something comfortable to talk about with a stranger. But then after, a half hour or so, we're asking much more personal questions. Who would you pick?
It's funny you ask that because I was thinking about this. And this is actually someone that I've had as a guest on the show. So I don't know if that's if that's cheating or not, because I know he'd be a great conversationalist. And it was Salman Rushdie, who is, very publicly is a great conversationalist. And I have a feeling privately in my dining room, I could get a lot of really good gossip out of him. But
as long as you don't have anybody coming after you.
He's safe now, but I appreciate you saying that. My husband said this morning, I asked him, he said John Cleese, but then he said, is it just dinner or is it more than that?
Well, my first choice would be Socrates.
Socrates. Well, yeah, interesting. I mean, people that you think would be a good conversationalist. Let me read a couple of more. Would you like to be famous? In what way? Before making a telephone call, do you ever rehearse what you're going to say and why? What would constitute a perfect day for you? When did you last sing to yourself, to someone else? And six I circled. If you were able to live to the age of 90 and retain either the mind or body of a 30-year-old for the last 60 years of your life, which would you want? I chose body. What can I say?
Wonder who you choose for your partner.
Exactly. But you know, it's interesting.
If you look at the ones near the end,
yes,
they get much more intense.
They do.
You know,
in fact, I think there are four questions in here about death. Do you have a secret hunch about how you will die? If you knew that in 1 year you would die suddenly, would you change anything about the way you're living now and why? These are serious questions, and obviously questions I think that people don't necessarily feel comfortable talking about.
Well, but after 45 minutes of getting close to someone and going back and forth where you've revealed stuff, they've revealed stuff, people are comfortable. But, you know, you'd be comfortable talking about those kinds of things with someone you feel really connected to and close to. And so that's the idea, is that you build it gradually, and it's back and forth is really crucial. You know, if one person's doing all the talking and the other's just listening, you know, I mean, that's fine for therapy, but
is not therapy.
Yeah, yeah.
You've done this with several couples, which would be an interesting way to understand what that larger relationship might be about.
What do you mean with several couples? Go ahead.
Well, I was thinking, I mean, you could do it with a couple together, but let's say you added another couple or maybe even another couple. So there were six people in conversation.
Well, we've never done it with six, but we do it with four. I mean, six could take a long time, but we have found in one of our most recent studies that if you take two couples, ongoing couples, and who don't know each other as a couple or who know each other not that well, and the four of you do this, each of you answers each question, then you go on to the next, that you not only get close to the other couple, but it actually increases not only your closeness to your own partner, but even your passionate love to your own partner.
Really?
And when my wife and I, when we, she collaborates with me on this research, and I collaborate with her on her highly sensitive person research, when we first read about a study that had done this with two couples, Rich Slatcher had done this, that night we were going out to dinner with a couple we just barely knew, and we did this with them, and we had a wonderful evening.
Wow.
Both with them and when we got home.
Good for you.
But no, it's a great thing, and the research, we've now have a number of studies of it, and it's a really powerful thing to do it. If you're in a relationship, doing it with your own partner is helpful, but it's much more powerful to do it with another couple.
Yeah, interesting. These questions you came up how many years ago, and have you refined them over time?
Well, we've made little modifications for different purposes. So, for example, you mentioned the items about death. We did a study not too long ago where we're looking at trying to create closeness between members of the community and police. This was in a region where there was a lot of tension, and we brought pairs of people together, police and community members. And we learned from pilot testing that we had to drop the death items. They were just too difficult for the police, who are constantly dealing with that. In other contexts, I mean, these questions were initially designed for research being done with college students, and some of the items don't make as much sense for older people. So we have to, you know, they have to be tweaked a little bit. I mean, these are not necessarily the ideal questions. They meet our criteria, and they worked in the lab. So, you know, we pilot tested and tweaked them. But they were done based on the notion that there's this back and forth, gradually getting more and more personal. And then there's two other kinds of questions in there that we know matter a lot for getting close. We just threw in a few, but that's all it takes. One is feeling you're similar to the other person. So there's a few items that come up after a little while. Name some things you have in common with this other, that you've noticed you have in common. We never have any items name some things you don't have in common. Similarly, and even more important for getting close and even for romantic falling in love, is feeling the other person likes you. That's a huge thing. And so, again, after a little while, there's a few items, you know, roughly speaking, name some things you've noticed you like about the other person. Again, we don't have any items. Name some things you don't like.
Yeah, I got you. I got you. It's all moving in one direction. You do, though. I'm looking at number 24. How do you feel about your relationship with your mother? And because I am a mother, I thought, well, why did they put that one in there and not about your father? Was there thinking into that?
Well, again, we were just playing with the questions, but most people's relationship with their mother is more intense than with their father, at least in most cultures.
And maybe more revealing about who they are?
Yeah, Yeah, I mean, I think we would possibly ask a question about the father earlier on, although probably not, because, well, for most people, it's not a very intense. For a few people, it's extremely intense.
Right.
No, we just thought it would work. And again, that's a question we don't use if we're doing this with people in a, you know, in a retirement home.
Oh, and why is that?
Their mother's probably dead.
Yes. Yeah, but you still might have feelings about her, right?
Well, that's true. That's true. But, so you know, we do modify the questions a little bit. You know, one thing we're thinking about, one of my wonderful collaborators, Helen Fisher, just did a study where they interviewed about 5,000 singles. She works with Match.com.
Oh, sure.
And they found in that study that people who have different cell phones really don't like each other. It's like...
Really?
Yeah, it's like... What was the finding? Oh, here we are. 75%, well, that's your, no, but if your partner, if you have an iPhone and your partner has an Android, you really are much less likely to like them, and vice versa, if you have an Android and they have an iPhone. little things like that, I mean, you know.
Who would have thunk it, right?
Yeah, I mean, what kind of phone you got matters certainly more than whether you voted for Trump.
That's Arthur Aaron, and he has devoted really his career to studying the science of love. And you can join our conversation 1-888-477-9499. Given the choice of anyone in the world, whom would you want as a dinner guest? That's the question. Also, send us an email, radiotimes@whyy.org, and you can tweet us at WHYY Radio Times. Let me get Tom from, looks like, Mount Holly to join us. Hi, Tom. Go ahead. You're on Radio Times.
Yeah. Hi, Marty. I'm not flirting, but I would like to have you as a dinner guest. I've been listening for a long, long time.
That's so nice.
I just wanted to add what I've been married for over 30 years now, and when I first met my wife, I was talking to her a little bit and asked her after dinner, and she said no, and I told her, I said, you know, I'm a great date, and she went out with me, and we got married, and we've been together ever since. So I always thought it was always good to be jovial and personable and confident when you were flirting with somebody. And I went on a lot of nice dates, and it's always worked for me.
That's great, Tom.
But I don't flirt as much as I used to. I got to say that.
Well, don't stop. You know, flirting is good. Tom, thanks for calling into Radio Times. Art, do you want
to?
Yeah, nice speaking with you as well. Art, any critiques or observations back at Tom?
Well, just one point that came up, a study I did with my former graduate student, Barbara Fraley, she's now very successful, was to find that another way that helps people get close is to share humorous things.
Ah, yes.
And that's a good experience for people, and it helps bring them closer.
Well, I would think I'd love to spend actually the whole hour talking about humor and love and intimacy, because obviously with humor and with laughing together, it's not just the shared joke or shared observation, but it's that physical release that goes along with it.
Oh, yes. And in fact, most of my research, other than the brain imaging research, and we've done a little on it, has been on the benefits to long-term couples of doing novel, challenging, exciting things together. And that's one of the reasons why humor probably has an effect. But, you know, if you just, if you go out once a week and do something different, not just same old, with your partner, it dramatically increases the quality of your relationship. And we've done a lot of studies. Other people have done studies. There's random assignment studies following people for months afterwards. It's a really powerful thing to do something novel and challenging. It doesn't matter as much in a new relationship because you already have lots of novelty and challenges forming the relationship. But after a year or two, it really matters. My wife and I, one of the things we do that's exciting is collaborate on research. I don't know if most people would find that a little...
Hey, it works for you. What can I say?
Yeah. Well, we also do other things that are novel and challenging.
Well, good for you. Well, it's been a great pleasure. Happy Valentine's Day. Arthur Aaron, thanks for joining us today in Radio Times.
My pleasure. Thank you for interviewing me.
You're very welcome. Research professor in the Department of Psychology at Stony Brook University. And we'll post those 36 questions on our Facebook page, and you can check them out. I'm Marty Moscoe. Thanks for joining us on Radio Times.